had to leap of faith and never look back, never thought twice from there. It's been not an easy journey, as you can imagine. Land a legacy. Most people think, hey, I don't want to work a 9-to-5. I want to go and start my own business. And then they're working 80 hours a week and Sundays and Saturdays. And then the kid's like, what about me? Land a legacy. So for me, it was going through the toll, and I didn't have 35 cents to pay the toll. And I just had $40,000 6 months ago that I just blew through. Land a
legacy. I need to find investors. And that is the most common question. If they don't have a rich uncle, if they don't have a relationship with a capital firm, how did you do it?
So if you are trying to raise capital for the first time, people are going to invest in you. People invest in what they know and trust. So always remember that when you are dealing with investors, it's not transactional. It's a relationship you're creating, right? So you're creating financial friends. So
relationship is the key.
But what I learned from that, and I kept a lot of those relationships, was because I communicated. I told them, even if they didn't want to hear it, I told them the truth, right? So they showed that I had character. But if you're not communicating, you're hiding, and you know, not being transparent, that's where I see you have most of the issues. It can take a year or two for somebody sitting in the sidelines watching what you're doing before they make the decision to invest with you.
Today's guest has raised over $50 million in capital, runs a fund that spans everything from Class B multifamily to luxury single-family homes, and somehow makes real estate sound simple. When it's everything but. Faquan Bilal is in the house. I got to ask you, do you sleep?
Yes. I get about 4.5 hours. If I'm lucky,
wow.
Get up at 4 a.m., so I guess I'll fall asleep around 11, maybe 5 hours. Of real sleep, though, I'll probably only get like 4 hours, 4.5 hours of REM. Like really good wow. Sleep. Here's the bit where I'm like in a deep sleep. I'm here to tell you.
It is. That's why I'm impressed. I can't do it. I mean, I could maybe do 6 hours. But, you know, I was just traveling for a couple of days and I slept very little. And I came back home last night and I just crashed. I think I slept for like 10 hours.
Awesome.
So you're the founder of NNG Capital Fund. And from what I've gathered, you've built all this not from a real estate dynasty, but from just pure drive, hustle, some serious creativity. Take me back 25 years ago, before the fund, before the $50 million. What was fueling you at the very start?
I guess where I come from, growing up in a low-income area, single-parent household, and just seeing the struggle that my mom went through, being the breadwinner of the house. I didn't want to be in that situation. So like any kid from my area, always aspired to do more. And that hunger was built from there. So earlier on, my mom actually taught me sales skills. She used to take us out to the local flea market, bazaars, whatever you call them. We had the opportunity to hone my selling skills and spend time turning no's to yeses. And when I got my first sales job in telemarketing, it was amazing getting the no's to yeses. And eventually, you know, transitioned into corporate and started shadowing a family member of mine doing real estate. And was able to had my salary in a few months and decided to take a leap of faith on a journey. I just really looked at it and said, hey, if I'm going to put all of these hours and all my dedication, I think at the time I was probably catching like 2 buses to work. When I was on telemarketing, I was catching 2 buses to work. But even before I got the job in corporate, I was like, this is a lot. It's a ride, hour, 15 minute ride to work, hour, 15 minute ride home on a bus, and things that I would have and just keeping that hunger. But you know, when I finally made it up the corporate ladder, someone like probably like 23, 24 years old. And I was just sitting there saying, you know, I need to put all this time, energy, and effort into me, right? What can I do? And real estate was an eye opener. My family member that I was shadowing was making a lot of money and had to leap of faith and never look back, never thought twice from there. It's been not an easy journey, as you can imagine, you know, in this business, the GFC, all of those things forced me to grow and had to dig deeper within myself with the market dynamics. So, yeah, but I love the freedom of choice that I had, right? I won't sit here and say that real estate is freedom, like a lot of people talk about. Hey, you're going to get freedom. Unless you're like a passive investor, you're just investing capital and you're just getting returns every month. You have to actively manage your investments, but that's probably as passive as it gets. But if you're a operator, the freedom that you get in real estate is I work from home instead of go to the office, or I'll go on vacation, I'll do it when I come back, or I'll have my team do it, I can outsource it. The flexibility right. that you get when you run your own shop, because it seems like you work more hours as an entrepreneur, right? Most people think, hey, I don't want to work a 9-to-5. I want to go and start my own business. And then they're working 80 hours a week and Sundays and Saturdays. And then the kid's like, what about me? Right. It's like, then you're like, what about me?
When you run a business, you're always on, right? You're on vacation with a family, you're still on.
It's been a journey. It's helped me grow into something that I wouldn't even imagine because of the challenges that I've been pushed and pulled through. And I'm grateful. And I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't have it easier. I would want to go through the same challenges and struggles because I like who I am. I like who I become. I like what the market shifts and the different things that I went through forced me to the person I am now to become.
It was a good answer. I would love to get into more of the challenges and specific examples. From the beginning, can you think of one defining moment or event that made you say, I want to do real estate? Or was it?
Money. I saw a $40,000 check. At the time I just turned 24. I was making close to $100,000 a year, maybe more, maybe 110. I had a sales job. I had a base commission plus salary. I had just landed a big account. And that brought me over the $100,000 mark. And I remember being CEO and his partner took me out to lunch. I hadn't been at that job for maybe like 8 months. And they said, hey, you're doing really great. You just landed a big account. This is going to push your commission structure that we set up for you can take you to like 150. We didn't anticipate this. So we're going to lower your base a little bit. Give you a little bit more commission. And to me, that was a slap in the face. And I had already was shadowing my family member in real estate. I was planning on leaving, but on the edge. But either the aha moment for me was when I had did a transaction and made $40,000, which was half my base salary at the time. And yeah, just my 2 week notice and I went from there. That was the leap of faith moment. The first challenging moment after that was 6 months because I didn't have any financial literacy when I grew up. And I think that these deals would just, you know, fall out of the sky. I mean, we did have a pipeline of deals that we were waiting to close, like a domino effect. I was just counting hundreds of thousands of dollars that wasn't there, like most people do. So open it, wishing, quit my job. And I blew through that $40,000 so fast. A wake up call for me was going through a toll one day and didn't have the money to pay for tolls, literally trying to pay for a 35-cent toll with pennies. I think the closing was supposed to happen like in 2 days. And it's like same thing when people work, they live check to check. And some people have experienced this probably can relate. When you're waiting for that paycheck and you're borrowing lunch money and you get paid Friday and you got to borrow $20 for gas and lunch or food or whatever. And then you get paid and you pay the person back and it's a borrowing cycle. So for me, it was going through the toll and I didn't have 35 cents to pay the toll. And I just had $40,000 6 months ago that I just blew through. And that was a wake up call for me to really clean up and learn how to build reserves and hold on to the money. So that was the first challenge for me is really understanding what money was and how money works.
And that $40,000, where did that come from?
A real estate transaction.
Okay.
Yeah.
That wasn't the first transaction then?
Yeah, that was my first transaction.
Okay. Interesting.
That was me.
So you started raising capital, right? And what was that first...
Right.
When you started raising capital, what was that first pitch like? How did you know who to pitch to and how to even build the pitch deck or whatever materials you used? I have so many people come to me, beginner developers, saying, hey, I've got this amazing project. I just don't have any cash. I need to find investors. And that is the most common question. If they don't have a rich uncle, if they don't have a relationship with a capital firm, how did you do it?
But I was like many years later. In the beginning, it was helping investors offload their properties by partnering with them. So I would, before the raising capital, I would partner with investors that had challenges selling properties in the hood, in the low-income bad areas. And my older brother was a mortgage broker, and he tried to get me to come on that side of the table. And I was like, I don't want to wait 30 days to get paid. I need the money. I found an investor. I was just talking about him the other day. He passed away. He was probably 92 years old the last time I saw him. And he was actually in the building department trying to get permits, still flipping houses at 92. I was like, wow. He actually gave me the opportunity to partner with him on a few deals to help him get rid of the deals and split profits. So that was, you know, my entry into the game. I did probably, I don't know, 30, 40 houses with him over the first few years without any of my money into it. And then he started to just deed the properties over to me and hold the mortgage. and became more passive and let me be the operator. And that was how I built my capital up, and also leveraging my credit, my family credit, and partnering on deals that way. But when it came to raising capital, I wanted to know how the guy who I was learning from was getting the money to buy the properties. And we did a closing one time, and actually the closing package came to me by mistake, his part of the closing package, and it had the payoff, the lender, all of the information. So I was like, oh, this is a hard money lender in the city, in New York. So I reached out to them, and they had asked me to send my track record. And I put the package together, the 30, 40 houses that we sold, all of the HUDs and statements to show my company name and the properties. They were like, oh, wow, this is the guy who's actually getting rid of the properties that we're lending this other guy for. So they knew that I was a mover and a shaker, I guess, and they gave me an opportunity. They gave me $2 million, not all at once, maybe $1 million out the gate, but they were only giving me a percentage of the money for acquisition to protect themselves. Of course, no more than 65% of their money was into the property for acquisition and construction, and I had to put up the rest of my money. So we did that for a while, and I started to use my capital. But as you are aware, you can only do so many deals with your own capital. So the next step for me was to try to find friends and family. And that was really tough because, you know, my family giving me $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, although they saw what I was doing, really didn't believe in it. So I was fortunate. I was leasing an office where my business was, and the landlord used to see a lot of contractors coming in and out. I mean, he knew I was some sort of investment firm, really didn't know what I did. And he took the opportunity to take me to lunch and ask me what I did. And I asked him about the commercial business. He was inquisitive about the real estate business, and he started lending me money. And it started from there. Then his friends got involved and just evolved from there. That was the way that I had it structured in the beginning. I would go out and get the loan from the lender, and then the rest of the money I would get in second position from the landlord. And then they would give me construction money, and we worked deals out like that. And I would put some of my money into it also. And that was my model all the way up into the GFC. You know, some of the deals I was buying were all my money. Some of the deals I was using their money. And, you know, I had a lot of my money into the deals. And when the GFC came, I got hurt. Fast forward to about 2010, kind of rebounded, 2011. 2013 was when I set up my first fund. So if you are trying to raise capital for the first time, people are going to invest in you. People invest in what they know and trust. You don't have a track record, but they know you have integrity. They know you are a person that will communicate. They will invest in you. If you have the knowledge and know and resources, they will invest in you. They invest into you because of your character, integrity, and who you are. So always remember that when you are dealing with investors, it's not transactional. It's a relationship you're creating, right? So you're creating financial friends. They want their money to generate income, whether it just depending on if they're in the beginning of their journey or the end of their journey, they want to keep that money to work, right? So once people understand how money works, that you use money to make money, not to like just keep it in a savings account, that money has to produce yield because of inflation and everything else. So once you understand that and you get around in that circle of people who understand that and have that mindset, it becomes easier for you to raise capital. Raising capital is a whole separate business. They just have to learn it, right? So people will refer people. If you communicate with people, you pay them on time. If you have challenges, you communicate with them. Not everything is always going to work out in the investment world. Not everything has worked out for me. When I kept that communication with my investors, I was upfront with them. I told them things that I didn't think they wanted to hear, but it was the honest truth, right? So sometimes you have to have the heart to do that. And people appreciate that, right? So building those relationships helps you raise capital.
So relationship is the key.
Yeah.
Can you give an example of something that didn't go right and how that communication helped you out?
Yeah, I'll give you the GFC, right? I mean, it was systemic at the time where it was happening everywhere. So, you know, me communicating to investors saying, hey, you know, if the values are less than what we expected, I might not be able to pay you all your money. And I can't continue to make monthly payments. You know, we'll work it out on the other side when we sell the property, and you might lose principal. You know, they didn't like it, but they did say, hey, that's better than you filing bankruptcy and basically I'm not paying me at all and me taking a loss because these other operators are doing that or they're not communicating. So that was a wake up call for me. I was able to fire sell a lot of properties. creates strategic opportunities for new investors, holding mortgages, becoming a lender. Very creative ways that I had to get out of that and make sure my investments were whole. I took a hit, had to start all over again. That was one challenge that I went through. But what I learned from that, and I kept a lot of those relationships, was because I communicated. I told them, even if they didn't want to hear it, I told them true. Right. So it showed that I had character. And basically, a lot of those investors still invest with me today. I was the guy who communicated with them. So it became easier. And then fast forward, after the GFC, some challenges you have where you market a deal, where you underwrite it, and you think it's going to be one number. And once you get the deal, you go through asset management, things happen, right? Construction budget may be more than you anticipated. You find out things from the seller after you buy the property that you didn't catch in your due diligence. And that kind of shifts the numbers on certain things, and you don't make the profit you thought you were going to make. And now you may not lose money, but if investors say, hey, you partner with somebody, you go, hey, we're going to make $100,000 when this deal is done, then you make $25,000, you know, they're not going to be happy with that because you made, you know, $75,000 less than was anticipated. So instead of, you know, on a $50,000 split, you're doing, you know, $12,500, which is a major difference. So people are not happy, but if you communicate it with them throughout the way and tell them what went wrong, what went right, and what could have been done differently, and you build the process to not let that happen again, because that's going to happen to your journey, right? You're going to lose money. You're going to fall short. You're going to go over budget on construction. But if you keep that communication along the way where people can see what went wrong and you can take from that to not make it happen again and rebuild your SOP or whatever, that goes a long way.
Absolutely. The common thing that comes up time and time again is investors, lenders, institutional funds, they keep asking sponsors to provide their track record. Everybody wants to see the track record in the marketing deck, and they want to make sure that you have absolutely flawless track record. How do you manage the fact that if we've been in business long enough, we've seen the cycles, and not every deal went perfectly? Not every deal was successful. And even though you have been doing it for 20 plus years, there have been cases that, you know, when investors lost money, when you lost money, maybe you went through a foreclosure once in a while, maybe you had investors lose a lot of money. How do you combat that? Or what would you recommend?
Well, I have to say, you know, today we have never lost principal on any investments. So that's something that, you know, I'm proud of. But there has been situations where we didn't hit the targets we achieved. And I'll give you an example of that, just to be fully transparent. We own a few multifamilies. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the space, but insurance, like one of our properties increased by 70%, you know, so that's like choking the cash flow, you know, that drives the yield down. And when we underwrote the deal, we didn't anticipate that insurance is going to jump that high, right? So those things happen throughout the process that don't let you hit targets that you marketed or share with your investor at the beginning when you underwrote the deal. So you have to be prepared for that and a refinance, right? If you bought a deal in 2021 and said, hey, we'll refinance, interest rate's going to be 4.5%. So, you know, we actually modeled it out at that because at the time, you know, rates was 3%, 3.5%. So, you know, now interest rates would be higher than that, maybe 6.5, 7 or whatever it is, right? So that makes the cash flow not what it is and drives the yield down as well. So those things happen, which you really can't help, right? Because those are things that are systemic in the market that changes and shifts. But if you have an intelligent investor that's been investing for a while, they understand, right? If you have a newbie investor who go, oh, you told me 10%. It's not 10%. So, you know, you have those issues. But the more seasoned investors understand the market dynamics and they know that if you have to navigate some narrows and you communicate and they don't lose principal, you know, most investors are okay with that as long as you communicate. But if you're not communicating, you're hiding and, you know, not being transparent, that's where I see you have most of the issues.
Interesting. Shifting gears a little bit, you've said in the past, part of your mission is breaking down complex strategies. What's one principle or mental model of income that even a first-time investor needs to understand?
Yeah, it's really, you know, when you're underwriting a deal or you are evaluating a deal, you're trying to be the best terms. You want to try to see if you can do a risk-adjusted yield. Sometimes that gets complex. So if you are going to, for example, we had a deal where it wasn't stabilized. We're evaluating a deal and we want to structure a seller carry back, a note. We want the owner to become the lender to avoid capital gains if they sell and get this big bag of money. So trying to structure that can sometimes be complex because you have a seller on the other end who may not understand how to be a lender. So you have to like walk them through the process and what's in it for them, right? So this situation that I'm talking about, we were able to communicate with the owner and say, hey, you could be the lender at 6%, interest only for 3 years. We'll give you some money at closing. We'll give you a piece of the deal. When we refinance it, you'll make a little bit more than you were going to make when you're going to sell it, but you have to wait 3 years because you have to educate a seller who don't understand what becoming a lender is, right? And then sometimes the attorney don't even understand that. So going through that process, explaining it to them and showing them how it's a win-win for them, sometimes it can be complex, but once you get through it, you built a new process that you can now market to other sellers that are exiting from the property. And that could be on a single asset, that could be on a multifamily, structuring deals with lenders and building a different capital stack, the first lender, mezz lender, common equity, pref equity. Those structuring those capital stacks can be complex also, right? So you can get to a blended interest payment that you're making, which allows you to cash flow.
And how do you typically find deals where the seller is willing to become a lender, or how do you convince them? Because I would imagine when somebody decides to sell, they just want to get paid and move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. So I don't want to say it's very simple because it's not, but it's in my mind it is because I have a process. Sometimes you have to illustrate it to them in a way where it makes sense. And the easiest way is the tax advantage, right? So, you know, what is your plan when you sell this property? I'm going to sell it when I go to Florida. I'm going to retire. Okay, great. How much money do you need to survive on a monthly basis, right? Okay, if you need, I don't know, $3,000 a month, would you take with $5,000 a month worth, right? So, okay, $5,000 a month worth. Now reverse engineer it, find out what the interest would be off of a $5,000 a month payment, whatever it is, right? So now I've got them above and beyond what they wanted. Plus I give them money at closing, so they can have a big bag when they leave. And I structure something where the money they're receiving from me, the interest, is above and beyond what the expectation is. But it's just carried out in the longer term interest only. And then the tax that I always show them on a spreadsheet, if you sell this property, right, it's the illustration part. If you sell this property, you're going to give this money away. If you become a lender, then you get to keep this money, but it's deferred gratification, right? Are you the guy who ate the marshmallow when a guy ran out of the room, or did you wait the 15 minutes so you came back to eat the marshmallow, right? So that delayed gratification explanation kind of helps people look at the big picture and go, well, there's more money on the table if I wait a little bit longer. And if the paperwork is right, where if this guy doesn't perform, I get to get the asset back. Yeah, not everybody's going to do it, but more likely once you educate people and they see that it's more beneficial, they usually move forward with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's good advice. What's next? What's coming down the pipeline for NNG? What are you working on?
Yeah, the first two quarters is really operational efficiency. You know, so there's four parts of the business. People, execution, cash, and strategy, right? So you need all four to be successful. So we worked on the people part a lot in Q1, and that's whether you're doing a development of your team members, whether you're investing in coaching programs, whether you're reading for the quarter and talking about it, whether you're doing bonus incentives, whatever it is, right? You need to constantly work on that to keep your people motivated. And then operational efficiency, what KPIs can you refine? What can you add? What can you take away? How can you automate things? That's kind of what we've been focusing on the first two quarters. And now we're in buy mode because it's the season really where you have a lot of operators that are in trouble and you can find a lot of ways to get into creative deals, whether it's through strategic partnerships, takeovers, having the ability to buy cash at a bigger discount because you can raise the capital and close fast and pretty much go from there. And then really another thing that we're focusing on this last quarter and a half is really creating new relationships with investors. That takes time when you're raising capital also is, yeah, it's a nurturing process. So it's an education and nurturing process to really get the investors to know, like, and trust you. It can take a year or two, but somebody sitting on the sidelines watching what you're doing before they make the decision to invest with you.
A lot of people think that they could just throw a social media ad and get introduced to a bunch of new investors and then close deals within 2 weeks.
Then, yeah.
How does one get in touch with you and learn more about the fund and the opportunities that you have?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. They can go to nngcapitalfund.com, set up a discovery call, and just get to know each other. That's usually how it starts. It's a relationship. It's not transactional. It's long-term. If I can do anything for my 26-year journey in helping you or just having a conversation to learning what your goals are, that's where it starts. If you want to check out some of our projects, you can catch me on Facebook or LinkedIn. I post a lot there, and I'll be happy to talk to you.
Well, I'll be looking forward to staying in touch.
Absolutely. When the state development